I'm Steve Kraske, and this is KCUR's Up to Date. Vaping among young people is on the rise. Despite guidelines against it, teachers say these new alternatives to cigarettes continue to be popular in school and at an increasing rate. Today, new research shows that e-cigarettes could lead to respiratory issues. Largely thought to be less harmful than traditional smokes, studies show that vape pens can cause chronic bronchitis. Then, with more than 2 billion users, Facebook is influencing individuals and the groups who use it. But how? Is the social media platform a net positive or negative on society? And is there even an answer to that question? We'll get you up to date after this hour's news. One Kansas school official says the epidemic of vaping among school kids hit the state like a tsunami. Across the country, vaping among high school seniors nearly doubled between 2017 and 2018 to 21%. There's a problem here, and that is there's growing evidence that this idea that vaping is harmless is completely false. Vaping, KU researchers are finding, leads to chronic bronchitis, and that means coughing and shortness of breath and fatigue. Those researchers say they're worried about a wave of chronic obstructive pulmonary disease is on the way. COPD, as it's known, is commonly caused by smoking, and it's already a leading cause of death in this country. With us to talk about vaping, Dr. Matias Salate is chair of the Department of Internal Medicine at the KU School of Medicine and the lead researcher at KU on a vaping study. Doctor, nice to have you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Luann Fox is an advanced placement teacher in the Olathe School District, and she's dealt with student vaping. Luann, nice to have you too. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you.
Well, Luann, let me begin with you. How prominent is vaping or inhaling nicotine via an aerosol, which is what vaping is, in the Olathe School District?
From what I understand, we have many students who do that.
Do you see them?
Well, I am so wrapped up usually in what I'm trying to teach that I confess I really don't. And it's easy to hide because these are held in pens. Some of the devices look like they're going to be jump drives, so they're easy to hide. And but I know that it happens because there's student talk, and while there's no smoke, you can still smell the remains of it sometimes.
You know, one school official in the Goddard School District near Wichita said that vaping struck the state and the district like a tsunami, as I mentioned in the opening. Has that been the case in Olathe?
We have seen an uptick, sure. We have. And I not to single Olathe out as much, but I think in the other Johnson County school districts as well, my friends have reported that vaping has certainly been on the rise.
But why is it so popular? Any theories? What is it about vaping that's so appealing?
Well, there's still the delivery of nicotine, so there's still this drug, right? And the students are getting the hit from the drug, and they, it's a way to feel cool without basically the smoke. It's a way to initiate each other into cool,
yeah.
And we're seeing it filtered down as well. I mean, in the later months when this was actually happening, we were getting reports of students on school buses, right? In late middle school, actually, having that too.
In middle school too.
Yes.
I was going to say, where do students go to vape?
Sometimes our restrooms at school, because no smoke. They probably don't think about the smell sometimes afterwards. And the smell is nothing like a smoke smell, of course. It's going to be something like bubble gum or cupcake because... and that's another issue is the scent that is appealing and the flavor that's appealing to
adolescents,
that kind of thing. So you're smelling that, but definitely in the parking lots, we hear about that. And then through their social media, they'll talk about being at each other's homes and doing that while their parents are out.
Is it against school policy to do it?
Absolutely.
It's one of the things that's written into the code of life in the Olathe district.
Right. So yeah. What happens is because of the drug, it's the offense for having it is treated like it would be if they were having a cigarette. So, for instance, vaping would be treated like having a cigarette because of the nicotine. If there's found to be marijuana instead, then it's going to be treated as, you know, basically a pot smoking offense. And so they do that. I will say that in our Olathe school district, though, one of the things that they've kind of instituted that has been, I think, really a positive thing has been when students are caught, right, and they're disciplined, part of the discipline is to sort of watch a video, watch something that the administration has put together about what these dangers actually are. So if they watch that and they successfully complete that, the in-school suspension is sort of, you know, mediated, and they get to go to school a little bit sooner than they would otherwise. If they're offending again, though, they're treated as like a regular second offense.
Do those vaping videos, do they have any impact?
From what I've heard from administrators, yes. They're saying that this, you know, approach to the discipline as we're teaching through the discipline, like we're going to be teaching in school, that the students feel more informed, or, you know, they just weren't before. They were just really following the peer pressure. And so they are saying that they're seeing inroads being made.
You know, there are probably some listeners out there who don't really understand what vaping is. And I'm wondering, how do students get away with it? And what you're saying is these pens that they use, and they're shaped like a pen that you use to write. You can slip those back in your pocket. They're not hot. I mean, and you can hide them pretty easily, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Right. And the other device would, you know, look like a sort of like a flash drive or something. I mean, like something that, you know, you would expect a student to have. So it doesn't really raise suspicion.
You know, how distracting has it proven to be when it comes to interrupting what's going on in the classroom? I mean, do students do it in class sometimes?
I have heard that they do. And, you know, you've got, I'm a teacher, and I can't have my eyes everywhere at once, even though I'd like to. I mean, I've got 30 bodies in the classroom, and I'm still trying to deliver content as well. So, I'm going to have my back turned, and I don't know that that happens in my classroom. I suppose I wouldn't be so surprised if it did, but I certainly have heard stories of that happening when the teacher's attention is elsewhere. It's just easy for students to do through their sleeves. They get very adroit at it. I mean, they're good at texting, right, under the table. So, you know, it just stands to follow that they're going to be pretty skillful at doing this too.
Kids, that's what they do. Kids, yeah. Well, Dr. Salate, you certainly have picked up on the gravity of this problem because you've been researching the impact of this on the body. What have you picked up about how popular vaping is among young people and why it's proven to be so popular?
Well, so what we pick up with students is that they do this, like you said, in a very steel fashion. Mm-hmm. And high school students basically tell us that about 60-70% of the school students are vaping at the present time.
60-70%. That's far correct. Higher than the national number I just threw out a little bit.
Well,
ago.
these are the people that admit to it, to the CDC and
boys
the
and girls.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the problem is that you, like with tobacco cigarettes, many people who do, they don't actually say they do. It's not fashionable. But if you're young and you don't want to really tell your parents what you're doing, then you're not going to say that either, even though you do it. So it's exceedingly prevalent at the point.
Are you surprised by that?
Well, am I surprised by that?
Yeah.
Maybe I'm a little disappointed. I'm not surprised because it's a marketing machine, and the peer pressure that is based on the belief that these vaping behaviors are not harmful to you. And so it's cool and not harmful. And then that's very reminiscent of maybe the 30s, 40s and 50s, where the same was said for cigarettes.
We didn't know at the time they could be harmful.
Yes. And even for a long time after we knew they were harmful, we still sold it as a cool thing to do. So I'm not surprised that this is happening. It's just disappointing it's happening again.
Doctor, when you tell young people that vaping is not as harmless as they've been led to believe, do they believe you? Or is it just some older person telling them how they ought to live their lives?
What I think the important piece with teenagers is not to really tell them what to do, but to fill them in with gap in knowledge.
Here's what you need to know about this.
That's right. So you want to present to them the facts and the research, and because they're not, obviously they're not stupid. But they don't know. They're fed all this information that is not true. And today it's very easy to be fed information from all kinds of different sources. And therefore, it is up to us to really bring the facts to light to them so they can make informed decisions.
Luann, students do have this sense that it's pretty harmless?
Yes. And I was just thinking while you were talking about how, I mean, I grew up in a time and in a culture where we were taught that smoking was evil because it was like, let's look at the inside of a lung and let's look at how corrosive and how horrible that is. No one ever spoke about the brain. It was like smoke was the bad thing. And I think that's the message. I mean, I'm older actually than many of my parents, right? So that message, I think, gets passed down. So kids have internalized that. Smoking in and of itself, smoke is the thing that is bad. They don't understand about nicotine, though. They don't understand about that as a drug.
Right. I mean, we did really well on tobacco cigarettes. You know, teenagers don't want to do this anymore. Mm-hmm. Right. But we have not yet done a good job on vaping and educating.
What's been your experience, doctor, when you sit a teenager down and explain to him or her the impact or the health consequences of vaping? How does that sink in?
Like I think what I said before, it sinks in. And sometimes it's the first time they ever heard of this, you know, because they do not know. They're thinking it's safe. It's touted as being safe. It's sometimes touted as being better than tobacco cigarettes, but nobody has really spoken to them what detrimental effects they could expect and what research shows.
Yeah, Luann.
Plus, just to add in, the other thing that's also true is that since this isn't really regulated and it's ubiquitous, students can get this in many, many places. They can get it at the Quick Trip. They can get it anywhere. If the student has the means, right, and they have the freedom to get it, they get it, and then they pass it on to their friends.
Yeah. Well, listeners should read more about Dr. Salateh's research at kcur.org. Kansas News Service reporter Celia Yopis-Jepson did a really nice write-up on it. Go to kcur.org and look for the headline, "If You Thought Vaping Was Safe, Kansas Researchers Have Bad News." So, doctor, tell us about the research you've done, because I know it's included robots and sheep and all kinds of things.
So to test these substances in a real research lab, the best is then to go to humans in the end. But humans are complicated, and it's not that easy to do everything with human beings, obviously. And that's a good thing, that we cannot do whatever we want to with humans. So we started with human cells from lungs that are coming from unfortunate people who unfortunately died, and gave their lungs for research. And we used these cells. So these are cells from non-smoking individuals, from non-vaping individuals. And we exposed them in the lab to that vapor. Mm-hmm. So we can control the exposure. We can control what actually the vapor contains. Mm-hmm. And then we can measure what these cells are doing when they're exposed to vaping.
And what are these cells doing?
So they're becoming inflamed. They're becoming unable to move mucus. This is a substance that clears normally your lungs and that has to be cleared out of your lungs and out of your airways. And they're failing and doing so. And to make sure that this is not only true in the research laboratory with cells, we went to an animal model that has very similar airways to the human
beings.
And
that's sheep.
And that's the sheep. Mm-hmm. So many asthma medications today used in humans were tested in that sheep model. So they're actually a good model.
And so this matter with mucus, you're saying this is what begins to cause chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, right?
Well, so this is an analogy to the tobacco cigarettes. What we know now is that it causes mucus to stop being cleared from the lungs. Mm-hmm. Now, this is what we call bronchitis. In a chronic state, that's chronic bronchitis. And the study has shown that about 18% of young teenagers who vape may actually develop that condition.
What percentage was that?
18%,
yes. Yeah.
Which in that short period that vaping is available is still a very high number. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to cough up phlegm is not a normal thing. And if you start doing that with vaping, that's a problem. In analogy to tobacco, if you go further down, that will likely develop in some percentage of people COPD. Mm-hmm. And we have done also mouse studies, and there actually we showed COPD in these mice, an allergy to tobacco again.
You're calling it COPD again, chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. How serious is that?
Well, currently it's one of the major leading causes of death in the United States. Mm-hmm. It's the third or fourth place, depending on how you count
it. Third or fourth place,
right?
Okay.
And it's all believed to be the remnant of tobacco smoking. But if it's true that the detrimental effects we find, and this was really only with nicotine and the solvent of the vaping cigarettes, we haven't added flavors, and we know that flavors have potential toxic effects on the lung as well. Mm. If we go down that road, we're just developing a new generation with COPD.
Luann, tell us about these flavors, because you alluded to that a few minutes ago. What are you talking about there when it comes to vaping and flavors?
Well, different from smoking, where, you know, the flavors used to were menthol, or you could smoke cloves or something. I mean, you've got flavors like cupcake. Mm-hmm. And bubble gum, and I don't know, some grape thing. And I mean, there's got to be more out there. But I mean, I hear about them, and then you're like, that's not normal stuff people smoke, right? So, I mean, you're not going to see a 25, 30 year old in the workplace smoking something like that. So, you know that that has to be marketed to youngsters, right? Who have the taste for sweet, who, to whom that appeals, right? To get them addicted. It's just, it's a sneaky way to get them, you know, playing this game for a while.
You know, given what Luann just said, Doctor, this idea of marketing and it completely overlooking the problems with vaping, does the marketing of vaping anger you as you look at what's happening out there?
Yes, it does.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I saw on TV an ad the other day touting vaping as a good thing. This was shocking to me, because I was actually not aware that these are hitting the market like this already.
And there's apparently no regulation here.
There's no regulation. And I remember when I was a kid, we had basically the same commercials for cigarettes. I mean, it's really a repetitive history.
Here we go again.
Here we go again.
That's this serious, yeah.
But we also make it really like tasteful for teenagers and young kids to do this.
Mm-hmm.
There was no cigarette that had mango flavor or sweet flavors and things like that. So it's pleasant to do.
As you look through your research at the impact that vaping has on the lungs of sheep, for instance, is there any doubt about the negative downside, or is there still research to be done?
Well, there's plenty of research to be done. You know, we haven't really done long-term studies to see what's going on, except for the mouse. So we need to now go in humans and we'll see. But I don't really want to wait until the first people who vape develop COPD. I would like to prevent this from happening and educate people to do so.
If our listeners want to chime in here with a conversation, perhaps you have a son or daughter who vapes and we're wondering, how do I handle it? What's a parent to do? And if by chance you're a teen who's hearing this and want to tell us what the attraction is, I'm all ears. 816-235-2888 is our phone number. Again, 816-235-2888, or again, tweet us at KCUR up to date. You know, Luann, just to piggyback on what I just asked the doctor, this notion of the way these products are marketed and no mention of the negative health effects here, how does that hit you emotionally? How do you feel about it?
Well, I hate that. I mean, I feel it's very sneaky. It's they misrepresent themselves. It's just, to me, it's very obvious, you know, what they're doing. And they're playing on, adolescent insecurities. As much as adolescents will say they want to be different, they also want to belong, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's timeless, that pull. So knowing that kids will bow to peer pressure, they capitalize on that, and that's sad.
Does it remind you, as a doctor said, of what we went through with cigarettes back in the day?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say absolutely. And, you know, it just becomes one more thing, because back in the day, you know, passing notes would have been the distraction in class. And of course, now it's this ubiquitous phone, texting, and everything with social media. And that's a one thing that teachers have to deal with. And now to put this other layer on top of it, so it's not just this that is a distraction, but now it could be like the passing around of the pens and the, you know, and the hiding of them and the, everything that deals with vaping and who's got what. You know, they're not learning in the classroom when they're busy thinking about all those other things.
You know, Doctor, I might be taking you beyond the work that you do, but do you have any sense of why the government hasn't stepped in here yet, given what you've been finding?
So the government has funded research studies to do fact-finding. Mm-hmm. I mean, that is the approach they have been taking. They want to see what the facts are and then regulate. The former commissioner of the FDA who stepped down wanted to take action. I don't know where that stands right now. They were thinking about restricting flavors, particularly eliminating some of the flavors that appeal to the teenagers the most, mm-hmm. to take that at the least away from that. There is also talk, and at least here in Kansas and Missouri, is talk about 21 to regulate tobacco and vaping products to not be sold under 21. And that would restrict probably access significantly.
Yeah. Let's go to some phone calls at 816-235-2888 and from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Good morning. I just want to caution people, especially teachers, not to be naive about vaping. I was a substance use disorder counselor for many years. The majority of people, adolescents especially, that use flavored vapes are doing so to disguise other drugs. When you have a liquid vape product, you can add anything to it. Heroin, cannabis, methamphetamines, or any drug you can grind up and add to the liquid nicotine. There are hundreds of flavors, pina colada, blueberry, bubblegum, and if you add a drug to the vape product, no one can detect that you're smoking a drug. And I'll take my comments off the air.
Yeah, and as you were talking, Luann Fox, again with the Olathe School District, was nodding her head. Luann, go ahead.
Certainly. Right. And we've seen that come in the next wave. I mean, the vaping had been the first wave, and then it was like students upping the ante, like just as she said, you know, mixing in other drugs, whatever mm-hmm. they can grind up and put in. Right.
Yeah.
And that opens a whole other door to more danger.
Doctor, I want to be clear about one point that you made before, and maybe I missed something here. Are we talking about potentially two negative impacts with vaping? One would be the flavor, and the other would be the nicotine in the vape product. Am I tracking you correctly?
That is correct. I mean, it's the flavors, it's the nicotine.
It's a double hit here, you're saying.
It could be a double hit. We don't know. We know for some flavors that they're toxic, actually. They're still in these products. We know from nicotine that it has detrimental effects on the lung, plus the addiction from the brain. And then even the solvent, propylene glycol and the vegetable glycerin, are not just harmless substances. So really, nothing in there is just without harm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, back to some calls here. Chris from Lawrence. Chris, you're on Up to Date. Good morning.
Good morning. Luann had mentioned earlier about the, some of the students maybe vaping pot as well. I know that there's a lot of like live resins that are really pure THC, or at least a very, very high percentage, maybe 98%. When those are vaped, is there any research relating that to COPD? Is it just smoke in general, or is it the chemicals and nicotine?
Yeah. Doctor, you want to take that?
So there is no research on THC inhalation and what that does that do to COPD, specifically not in vaping. So nothing is known about that. The real problem with THC itself is that it's actually a DEA-controlled substance. So that elevates the potential offense beyond smoking marijuana.
Okay.
Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Chris. I appreciate it. Let's go to Richard from Overland Park. Richard, you're on Up to Date.
Hi, guys. I really appreciate the conversation. I think it's highly valuable, especially for someone like myself who has a 14-year-old who's just getting ready to go to high school. And I want to comment that his grade school, my son's grade school did a pretty good job of imparting how dangerous vaping is. However, I am still getting from friends who already have high school students that it's very, very omnipresent, and it's more difficult for it's more difficult to detect for obvious reasons. There's no odor, and you know, you walk into a room where somebody's been smoking cigarettes, you know it right away. My question is there anything that is hard data on the books that shows that vaping is in fact not a safe alternative to cigarettes? And I harken back to when I was in high school, they could show us the pictures of people with emphysema, people on oxygen, the hard and fast evidence that cigarettes are a killer. I don't know that there's that same body of evidence for vaping, unless I'm wrong. And I'll take it off the air. Thanks so much.
Dr. Salate, take that one, would you please?
Obviously, it's not the same body of evidence because we are having research on vaping just for a much shorter period of time. But I think the evidence is accumulating that it's not safe. That's mm-hmm. the first thing. Is it better than cigarette smoking? There, I think the debate is open. It's not yet established, in my opinion, that it's really that much safer, but especially not for COPD. Whether cancer is different, we will have to evaluate, but we don't know that as yet. But there are plenty of studies now that show detrimental effects specifically on the lung. There are studies on addictive behavior, etc. So I think there the evidence is already clear that this is not a good way to start anything. The debate goes on about cigarettes.
So cancer, you're saying, and the causation, the link there between vaping and cancer, you're saying that's a little bit up in the air.
That's up in the air.
That's up in the air. Okay. Let's go to Brandy from Lenexa. Brandy, you're on Up to Date. We're talking about vaping. Good morning.
Good morning.
Go ahead, Brandy.
My question is, so it's just based on some research that I found out on my own. I started smoking when I was 14 and luckily quit when I was 23, but now I'm a runner, and I realized that I may have stunted the growth of my lungs when I smoked, and I'm just wondering if vaping may have that same effect.
Can it stunt the growth of your lungs, doctor?
I don't know for sure the answer to that, but if the processes that we're looking at in COPD are the same between vaping and smoking, the possibility that clearly exists.
Mm-hmm. I want to be clear about, Luann, about one other point that a caller raised a minute ago. This idea that if you walk into your son or daughter's room at home in the evening and your son or daughter has been vaping, you can tell, right? There's some kind of odor, based on my experience. I'm not sure odor is the right word, but there's a smell associated with it that if you walk into the room and you smell something different, maybe that's what it is.
Right, and usually sweet, yeah.
Yeah, usually sweet, mm-hmm. Okay. Let me go back to some calls, and Mary from Kansas City. Mary, you're on Up to Date.
Hi, thanks so much. First of all, I'm so angry about this whole thing that this is even allowed to happen, because it's just getting a whole nother generation addicted to nicotine and other things that they, you know, weren't going to do otherwise, because nobody smokes anymore, kids anyway. But my question is, how do you get kids to believe the research? Because every kid I've talked to just does not believe it. They just think we're old and stuffy and
yeah.
don't know what we're talking about.
And I was wondering the same thing before, Mary. Luann, again, what's your experience in response to Mary?
I think because vaping is so new, it's going to be really difficult to get kids to understand that this is not just a generational, you know, come down on them, but that we really are concerned, because
right.
these health effects are very real.
Mm-hmm.
And without longitudinal research to really back that up, at the present, I think that's very difficult to get kids to understand that. That's certainly the challenge ahead of us.
Hey, do we know if Congress is looking at this, Doctor? Do you have any sense?
There are some lawmakers clearly looking at
okay,
it.
Okay,
yes.
But no bills have passed. We're not seeing
not
a lot
yet.
Of action yet.
Not
yeah.
yet. But
okay.
but I want to say, you know, we know about smoking. They believe the smoking. We can make analogy. We did a really great job of smoking cessation, or not starting to smoke.
Mm-hmm.
We can use the same technology or techniques for those students as well.
Let me get one more call here. Riley from Overland Park. Riley, you're on Up to Date.
I just wanted to ask the question. I was the generation after all the vaping kind of happened in high school, so I'm very aware that there's kids of the age that can buy vapes, have created like a black market where they sell to all the underage kids to be able to get their hands on it, and that's probably a big issue why all the kids are vaping, and I was wondering if there's doing anything in the school systems to combat that.
Luann, any sense?
I'm not sure what can be done in the school system
to go outside and police this kind of transaction of older kids selling stuff to younger kids. Riley, what should happen?
Well, I think the age 21 would have a big impact, but it's just the problem that it's all marketed towards the kids. There's almost no marketing towards adults at this point in the vaping industry.
Yeah, okay. We're going to have to leave our conversation there. I've run a little long with this, but it's such an important topic. I want to thank Dr. Mattia Salate, again, chair of the Department of Internal Medicine over at the KU School of Medicine. Luann Fox, an advanced placement teacher in the Olathe School District. Thanks for an enlightening conversation. I appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
When we come back, we'll talk about Facebook and is it really a positive force on society or is it something else? I'm Steve Kraske and you're listening to Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we are back. I'm Steve Kraske. Yesterday on the show, what Kansas City youths can do to stay entertained and out of trouble over the summer, we met a teen who created his own weekend events group to deal with it. Hear that and other previous episodes at kcur.org/up-to-date. On Monday, the dark store theory and how it's affecting Johnson County, Kansas. We'll get an update on how a ruling from the state tax board could create a $100 million hole in the county budget. That's Monday on KCUR's Up to Date. Well, Facebook is 15 years old, but it seems so omnipresent in so many lives that maybe you think it's been around forever. But how do you feel about it these days? Is it really a positive force in your life? Or, as some people say, they avoid it as much as possible because they see so many people bragging about how good their lives are or how successful their kids are, and maybe the same isn't true in their lives. How often do you look at Facebook and why? That's our topic for this segment. With us, Jennifer Goldbeck is a professor in the College of Information Studies at the University of Maryland. She studies social networks. She joins us via Skype from Key West, Florida, and that's a nice place to join anybody via Skype. Jennifer, nice to have you. Welcome.
Glad to be here.
We want our listeners to chime in here with their thoughts on Facebook and whether it's a force for good or evil these days. Our number, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. So, Jennifer, I Googled Facebook and the words positive and negative last night and came across this link that said this: multiple negative psychological effects could result from spending too much time on Facebook and other social media sites. So, you know, that sounds pretty ominous. So I'm just wondering from your vantage point, is Facebook a force for good or evil in society these days, or how do you look at it?
I mean, I don't want to start off by just being the stereotypical academic, but the answer really is it's complicated.
Okay, that's fair.
There have been a lot of studies looking into what are the psychological impacts of using Facebook in particular. And you sounds like you found some of the ones that say it can be negative, because you do see all these people living these great lives, doing these amazing things, yes, always posting the good stuff, which can make you feel kind of like you're not as good as them. At the same time, there have been probably the same number of studies that show that it can have a really positive impact on reducing social isolation, whether that's for elderly people who don't get out a lot, or, you know, imagine that you're in a sort of marginalized group, whether it's race, religion, gender, sexual orientation, in a small town without a lot of people like you. Facebook gives you a chance to connect to other people, talk about those problems, feel like you're not as alone. And so it has a mixed kind of effect depending on how you use it. If you take that up to the more societal level, which I'm sure we will in this conversation, you know, there's a lot more to talk about there beyond just the individual person.
You know, I'm just sort of amazed at what people post about themselves. I mean, we live in an era now when people are far more open about their struggles, their problems, their personal issues. And holy smokes, you just can't believe what people talk about sometimes.
It's amazing. I agree. I'm kind of the top old end of being a millennial.
Yeah.
And so, you know, grew up in high school not having social media, thank God, because man, yeah. would I have done all kinds of things to make myself look bad now. But, you know, like on one hand, it feels like we've had Facebook forever. On the other hand, it really hasn't been that long.
Yes, that's
and I
true.
Think, you know, as a culture, we haven't figured out what's the right way to do this. How much do we want to share? What does it mean to, like, now we're all sort of little celebrities cultivating this brand and these, like, shows that we're putting on? I think it's going to take us quite a long time to figure out, like, what's the right way as a society to deal with that. And right now you get the full spectrum of some people doing these great, brilliant things, some people really oversharing, some people being total jerks online and thinking that it doesn't count.
Right.
And you know, we haven't been trained on how to do it the right way. We don't know what that is.
816-235-2888. How do you use Facebook? Do you like it? Do you not? What are your feelings about it these days? We want to know. You can also tweet us at KCUR up to date. So who defines what Facebook is these days? Is it the users and what they use it for, Jennifer, or is it by the company?
I think it's a little bit of both, but I think the most important part of it is defined by the users. And I say that because you talk to people a lot about Facebook and, you know, these boycotts of Facebook and how can it do all these bad things we've seen in the news, sell our data, release our data, leak our data, screw with the elections,
yes.
all this stuff.
Right.
And people are still on it. And, you know, as a computer scientist who studies this, I try out all these kind of Facebook alternatives. There's a lot of these that come along and plenty of them are better than Facebook. It's a nicer experience. The platform is beautiful. It protects your data. Why aren't people using those? And it's because nobody's there. You
yes.
can go on them
yes.
and none of your friends are there. And that keeps everybody on Facebook. I mean, Facebook does have a lot of nice features. There, people have a lot of data there. But I think what really matters is that that's where your friends are. And any competitor that comes along is going to have a really hard time competing because they don't have the 2.8 billion people that Facebook has.
Is it 2.8 billion now? The last number I saw was 2 billion. It's almost 3 billion now, you're saying.
It's kind of inching up there. It depends on how you count. They tend to look at monthly active users. So how many people are logging in at least once a month. And, you know, that can vary on how it's being counted. But yeah, it's basically kind of half the planet who has some form of internet access, which could just be, you know, on a flip phone in a developing country. Half those people are on Facebook. And, you know, in developed countries like the US, you basically have anyone on the internet who wants to be on Facebook is there. And
yeah.
then anyone who's not on Facebook has made a conscious choice not to join.
So you're sort of suggesting here, if I'm hearing you right, that there may be even better alternatives out there. But because Facebook was first and it appeared to fill this societal need for people to connect in some ways, that because it was first, it's become the thing and it's still the thing.
Sort of. I mean, it was, you know, it wasn't really first. Like, it was MySpace. So there were a bunch, and you look even at big players like Google. They've tried with Google Plus. Before that, they had Google Buzz. You know, both were decent platforms, but there was nobody there. And because Facebook was the first one to really suck people in, and they've had a very smart strategy in terms of getting it to be really attractive, making people want to join, and then adding in a lot of features, even before people knew they wanted them, that they did pull everyone in. And now they're in this point where they kind of have a monopoly because they have the users.
Yeah, that's interesting. Let's go to some phone calls here. The question on the table is, Facebook a force for good or evil? How do you use it these days? 816-235-2888. Cher from Kansas City, Missouri. Good morning.
Good morning. I just want to say that Facebook has been wonderful to me. I tell people my Facebook feed is a very peaceful place, and that's because it's all about the company you keep, whether
oh,
it's online or whether, you know, it's in person. I have some illnesses, and so I am in some groups where people have shared insights about those illnesses that I didn't hear from doctors.
Yes.
And it's been a fabulous thing. And then I've also been part of a group. A woman's grandson was born with a deficiency, and she rallied all these people to pray for him. And he's five, and he's thriving. And so we're now part of his village because of Facebook.
Huh. I appreciate that, Cher. To what extent has Facebook, Jennifer, been responsible for this, people being far more open about their lives and their challenges and this new personal wave we have going through society right now?
Yeah, they really have been. And I think one of the smart things that they have done is focus hard on building groups of people who can work and talk together.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like your caller is mentioning some of those groups. For me, the only real value I find in Facebook at this point is from those groups. And they make you feel like you can have these closed groups. It's just people who are part of that conversation that you want to be part of.
Right.
And, you feel like you can talk openly with them, especially because you have this sort of anonymity being behind a screen, being people you don't know, that can be really nice.
On my Facebook page last night, I posed this question. Some folks wrote in. David Folk, who works here at KCUR, wrote, he uses it for more positive things. I like seeing what friends are doing, saying, and thinking. My favorite thing is connecting friends by sending a special greeting on their birthday. If it wasn't for Facebook, I wouldn't have a clue it was their birthday. So Facebook helps them maintain a connection in a crazy, busy world. Leslie from Mission Hills, good morning.
Hi, Steve. It sounds like I could be a little redundant from the woman who just spoke.
That's all right.
About that group piece. The only angle I'd offer on that is that there's also a lot of community organizing going on, and some of those groups are public, but also sometimes the groups are private. And so, whereas I might have started with Facebook to keep connected to my children and so on, I'm about your age, Steve. There are really now only the only reason I see is using it in the context that your expert has been saying, which is both a closed group and the public group for community purposes, both organizing and personal. The only other thing I'd add, though, as I was thinking, is Instagram, now owned by Facebook, has got it so that when you plug in, and if you're only offering your visual delights on Instagram, that can also be posted to Facebook. And so I don't, I know a lot of the youngers have moved away and just used Instagram, but if it's linked at all, then, some of that stuff is getting cross-posted.
Yeah. So, Leslie, thanks. I appreciate that.
Sure.
This idea, Jennifer, of setting up closed groups, explain what that is, and is it complicated to do that on Facebook?
It's really easy to do. So anyone can go in and create a group for whatever you want. So I, for example, I'm part of one for women who run ultra marathons, so really long races.
Yeah.
It's closed, which means some moderator has to approve you to join the group. So for this particular one, it means they don't let men join the group, and they can kick you out if you're behaving badly. You could think you could create one for your sports team, right? Just the people who are on your team, or maybe for your preschool that your kid goes to. Very easy to set up. And what it means is anything you post in there is only visible to the other members of the group. They can't share it outside the group without, taking a screenshot, doing some kind of complicated thing.
Yeah.
And this is actually a reason, and this kind of is something Leslie just touched on in her call, that a lot of young people have Facebook accounts. My undergrads all have Facebook accounts, and they don't do a ton with it, except mm-hmm. they use it for all their events and their clubs, because
yes.
those closed groups allow you to schedule that kind of stuff and have communication in a way that's just easier than any other platform.
Gabrielle wrote us on Twitter, and she writes sort of something similar. I'm in support groups in Facebook for a socially isolating issue, which is reactive attachment disorder relating to our kids. That's my main use of it. So something very positive there, it sounds like, Jennifer.
For sure. I mean, this ability to connect with people who share a similar kind of struggle is really a lot of what we hoped the internet would be like back in the early days, right?
Mm-hmm.
When I was on AOL in high school,
right?
That's what we hoped, right? That you could go to these chat rooms, you could talk with strangers all over the world when there may be no one in your town who has the issue that you're dealing with. And Facebook has really allowed that to happen in having these groups and allowing these people to come together. And so you know, there's plenty of bad things that they're doing, but facilitating this kind of human connection that would be difficult otherwise is a great thing and absolutely has a big impact on people's lives.
Our topic, how do you feel about Facebook? Is it good? Is it evil? What is it? 816-235-2888. Reagan from Lenexa. Reagan, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
So I wanted to share that I think it, social media in general can be absolutely a great place to connect with people. But if the people who are using the social media apps aren't keeping the people orchestrating the social media in check, then they can be easily taken advantage of. There's a lot of business owners who rely on social media for exposure and interacting with their consumers. And if they don't do exactly what Facebook or, on the other hand, Instagram don't do what they want them to do, then they don't get the exposure that they need,
right,
that they rely on for their job. And
Reagan, I'm glad you called. Jennifer, we haven't really talked about this notion of, we have another Twitter comment here about the abuse, how Facebook is abusing privacy and violating users' security. That's the flip side of the coin here. How many people are really concerned about that? Do you have any feel for that?
Yeah. So Pew is a great organization. They have a research group called Pew and Internet in the American Life that studies all sorts of things about how people feel. And the answer is the vast majority of people are concerned about privacy on these platforms. But, you know, what do they actually do about it is a hard thing for them to figure out, because it's hard to leave the platform. Everybody's there. But over and over, what we've seen is Facebook is abusing that responsibility that they really should feel over our data, that they're sharing it and letting it out in ways that people don't like, but feel like they also don't have a lot of control over, because what are they going to do? They're not paying for Facebook, and there's kind of no place else they can go.
Do you have a feeling, is Facebook headed for government regulation? There's all this debate stuff going on in Washington. Missouri Senator Josh Hawley is very much involved with that. What do you see coming down the road?
Yeah, I think there's definitely going to be some. The first regulation that we're likely to see in this space will probably be around elections. There's a bill, I think, that's still being considered that essentially is going to hold social media companies to the same standards that print companies are held to for, like, disclosing who's funding political advertising. The social media companies, not just Facebook, all fought very hard against this originally, and now they're going to be subject to that. But beyond that, what are we likely to see? It's really interesting. There's stuff out there now. There's talk about, are we going to break these social media companies up? You know, do you break Facebook up into Messenger and, you know, separate out Instagram, which one of your callers mentioned is part of Facebook, and separate out events and separate out groups? It'd be interesting. I think that would reduce some of the power that Facebook has, but I don't know if it solves all the problems that we're talking about.
Yeah.
But I think Congress is finally becoming aware that, okay, there are problems here. We need to do something. And they're kind of trying to figure out what the right thing is.
Right. Well, I'm running out of time here, so I'm going to thank Eva, Quinn, Reagan, and Zane for calling in. I'm sorry I couldn't get to all the calls. And Jennifer Goldbeck, again, a professor in the College of Information Studies at the University of Maryland. She joined us via Skype from Key West. Jennifer, you were terrific. Thanks a lot for taking some time. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Monday on the show, how large retailers in Johnson County are trying to cut their property taxes and how that could put county homeowners on the hook. You can follow us on Twitter. We're at KCUR Up to Date. Follow me at Steve Kraske. And don't forget to like KCUR on what else but Facebook. Our theme music is composed by Bobby Watson. We had help this week from Linda Scher, Maria Carter, Danny Alexander, Luke Martin, Elizabeth Ruiz, and Emily Aiken. Have a great weekend, all. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.